Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, May 24th, 2015. This is episode 1190. Enjoy! The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple product is worth at gazelle.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, digital photography, home theater, and all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada or New Jersey. Outside those regions, those very special areas, you can use Skype. We had callers from Vienna yesterday and from all over the world. That's always fun. So if you're, because of the internet, you can hear this show everywhere. It's kind of an amazing thing. Internet makes it possible for 1.5 billion people to listen to this show. That's awesome. So take advantage of that and use Skype, and you can call free because it's a toll-free number. The website, techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. It is Memorial Day weekend. We salute the men and women of the armed forces who've given their all in defense of our great nation. I want to say happy Memorial Day, but it's not really. It's kind of a solemn occasion. Tomorrow you can barbecue. Tomorrow. Yeah. For today we'll take it a little seriously. As long as we're on a kind of a solemn note, sad news this morning. Did you ever see the movie about John Nash, the mathematician? What was that called? A Beautiful Mind. Remember that? He was schizophrenic. He had hallucinations, and yet he was a brilliant mathematician, won the Nobel Prize for mathematics. He and his wife were killed in a car wreck on the New Jersey Turnpike yesterday. They were riding in a cab coming home from the airport. He'd been in Norway speaking about math. And this is a cautionary tale. They were in the taxi. They weren't wearing seatbelts. Got in a horrible crash and flew out of the car, and both passed away. And I'm sorry to say that. John Nash was 86. His wife, Alicia Nash, was 82. Be a good night tonight to watch Beautiful Mind. Beautiful movie. Based on a book by Sylvia Nasser, which I read, and it's really a great book, too. Brilliant mathematician. So, another solitary note. Russell Crowe, who played him in the movie, tweeted, "Stunned, my heart goes out to John and Alicia and family. An amazing partnership. Beautiful minds, beautiful hearts." Always wear your seatbelts, especially, as Mike B., who's from New Jersey, says, on the New Jersey Turnpike. Yes. Yes, an important lesson. Ozzy, can I help you? My dog is whining again. I bring you here to the studio, Ozzy. One simple expectation, you're going to keep it quiet. You're going to be calm. You're relaxed. Oh, I see. Lisa's arrived. He's here. He only tolerates me until my wife gets here. She's probably going to come storming in moments because I nicked her MacBook because I wanted to play with this. This is the new Apple MacBook. And, the pundits kind of bashed it quite a bit, even when Apple announced it. I thought it was really cool. Less than 2 pounds, almost as thin as an iPad, Retina display. It's for the first time in many years, a Mac laptop comes in colors, not just silver. Good, she got the dog, but she forgot about the laptop. Silver, but also titanium, kind of a dark gray, a gunmetal gray. And this is, we have the gold one because it's opulent. And it's beautiful. Now, she was complaining a little bit about the keys because it's so thin. I think it's quite a good keyboard, and Apple pretended that they had made great strides in the keyboard with this kind of new spring, that the keys didn't wobble, blah, blah, blah. But really, it is a very shallow travel keyboard. And you're seeing this now with a lot of the new very thin laptops. I think of the Acer S7. When I first got it, very hard to type on. I made a lot of typos. It's so funny how you depend, for some reason, I don't know, you depend on the key travel. And these don't travel much. But they did. It's funny. They made the key caps, the tops, bigger, which should help a little bit. It's got that new Force Touch trackpad. That's kind of an interesting thing. And it's got a Retina display. And that's, on a 12-inch, that means you get a lot of real estate. And it's really looks quite crisp and beautiful. Battery life, I think 6 hours. Pretty safe to say about 6 hours. So it's a great little travel notebook. But people were complaining, and right, I think rightly so, because Apple didn't put a USB port on there. They didn't put a HDMI port. They didn't put an SD card reader. You can get all of those things in other Apple laptops. All they put is a headphone jack on one side and this power cable cord port on the other. But now this power cord port is unusual for Apple. It's not a MagSafe. It's something called a USB Type-C adapter. And you're going to see more and more of these, I think. I hope. In fact, I hope phones come with these soon. Because not only can it charge, it also can do data. It can charge in and out, so you can connect a phone to it and charge it. It's fast enough and has enough smarts to do video out of this. Everything that you would do on a laptop can come out of one port. The problem is, of course, if you're charging it, you can only do that one thing. That has spurred a number of connectors. Apple even sells one overpriced $80 connector that allows you to charge it as well as get a USB port and HDMI port on it. That seems a little bit expensive, but I'm sure others will do this because this is, for the first time in a long time, not proprietary. Most laptops, almost all the laptops I've ever seen, have a port that's unique right to that laptop. And Apple's MagSafe adapter, which is on all their other laptops, Apple owns, and you have to license it from them, and nobody does. So you have to buy your power adapter from Apple at a great markup. But this is the Type-C port on this. You're going to see a lot more of these. This is a standard. Apple was involved in the creation of it, but so was Intel and other companies. In fact, Google puts it on their new laptop. The Chromebook Pixel has two Type-Cs, one on each side, which I think is a good way to handle this. Apple didn't do that, just one. But that means that others can make adapters for this. There's nothing proprietary. I like that. That's why I think this should replace one of the reasons I think this should replace the connector on smartphones, too. It's unlike the micro USB. This is reversible. There's a saying that it always takes two times to put in a USB connector. First upside down and then right side up. You never get it right side up the first time. But on these USB Type-C connectors, like kind of Apple's own Lightning port, it can go either way. That I would like to see on smartphones. Plus, it adds some capabilities, right? Maybe I don't know why the newest smartphones like the LG G4 didn't do this since the standard is now out. Maybe they will, though. Maybe next year. Anyway, I like this little notebook. Not cheap at all. The base model, what is the base model? It's $1,000 and then $1,299 for the slightly faster processor, slightly more storage, 512 gig storage. So it's really a luxury item. And that's why I got it in gold, to show off. Isn't it interesting how some technologies can be almost fetish objects? Like you go, ooh, that's pretty. And I think how you treat technology says a little bit about you and about how you feel about technology. If it's just a tool, if it's a hammer, nobody goes, oh, well, some people, I guess, go, oh, that's a beautiful hammer. Oh, that's so elegant. Oh, I have to have that hammer. It's so precious. Maybe somebody who's really into hammering nails would appreciate an extra good hammer. But if it's a tool, usually, yeah, it's a tool. It's just a tool. I don't care if it's gunmetal gray or space gray or silver. It's a tool. But then every once in a while something comes along. The Apple Watch is kind of like that, where there's no good reason for anyone to want it. It doesn't add anything, except that it's just elegant. It's beautiful. It's nicely made. Apple's good at that, making technology feel good and look good. But so many of us, who cares, right? Give me something cheap. I don't need the fancy. I kind of like the fancy. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's talk high tech. It's your chance to ask questions, get some advice, get some vocabulary definitions. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte. The Tech Guy. Your call's coming up right after this. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Here in her Stars and Stripes outfit, you, practically all that's lacking is a baton and high white boots, and you could lead the parade on this Memorial Day.
Can you not see below the desk?
Are you wearing high white boots?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, awesome.
And the baton's down there, too.
How could I have doubted you? Heather Hammond, the Phone Ranger, dressed perfectly for every occasion. Hi, Heather.
Hi.
Do you've been here for hours, lining up phone calls, getting people ready, preparing them. Somebody sent me an email, said, I waited for 1 hour to talk to you. But all the other callers, they were so stupid.
Oh, my.
I know. I thought, well, that's, I'm, yeah. There are no stupid callers. You should know that by now.
Okay, so during the commercials, you tell me who that is, and they are X'd.
I honor every question. In fact, I want, if you feel like it's, oh, this is a dumb question. I shouldn't ask this in public. You should ask it, because that's the question that everybody's thinking. I wish I could ask this, but it would be, you know. I've been thinking this. You know, I don't want to embarrass one of our employees, but she's new, just graduated from college, and we gave her a spreadsheet to do, and she didn't know how to do it. She didn't know how to. I guess she's an English major. She'd never used a spreadsheet. Have you ever used a spreadsheet?
Yeah.
I realized, you know, there's no reason why we shouldn't teach people things like, you know, how do you click a cell and create a formula, all of that stuff. That's really useful, valuable stuff. People should know. There's no. That's not a dumb question. That's a good question.
Oh, it's wonderful.
How do I do this? What is this? In fact, you know, we're so used to it because it's been around since. In fact, spreadsheets were really the first killer apps on the Apple II VisiCalc, which had never been done before. It was an amazing. People went, wow! It sold more Apple IIs than anything else because they said, I used to do this with pencil eraser on paper. Now I can do it in a computer and it calculates and it's instant. So it's a new idea, this spreadsheet idea. We take it for granted now.
Once you get going, you fall in love with spreadsheets. Is that a weird thing to say?
It is. You know what? I'm really glad to hear you say that. I think that's exactly true. And that's kind of, Lisa and I were talking about this last night, and I think that's kind of true, that it doesn't have to just be, you know, Lisa's background is in finance, so of course she uses spreadsheets in business, but it doesn't have to just be for business. People use spreadsheets to do seating charts, to amortize a mortgage. You can use it as a kind of a fancy calculator to decide which credit card to get. You know, what's the actual cost of this? There's a lot of uses for this in the real world.
I did it when I was car shopping. You just reminded
Perfect
me.
Perfect example.
Because you could put, you know, is it stick shift? Is it da, 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 and compare and contrast?
And it doesn't have to be Excel. I think people think, oh, it has to be Excel. No. You can use the free Google Docs as a perfectly good capable
Google
spreadsheet.
One's good.
Yeah. It's all you need, really. I don't know. How did I get off on this? Let's take a call. Who should I speak to first?
Okay, well, Jerry has a dumb question. I'm kidding. It's a good one, and he's calling from San Diego.
Jerry, I celebrate dumb question. Hi, Jerry. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy.
Hi, Leo. Yes, you've helped me in the past, and in fact, I'm calling on my Obihai Google Voice phone line.
Sounds great. Does that still work?
Yes, it does. As a matter of fact, it seems to have gotten better. I don't know what they did, but it seems like there are a few glitches. Sometimes the voice quality is not consistent. But
well, it's dependent on your bandwidth. That's not Obihai or so. Obihai, we should explain. Obihai is a $100 device you connect up to your internet, and it gives you a phone in your house, and it's free if you use Google Voice. Now, for a while, Google said, "Oh, that's going to stop working." But I guess they changed their mind.
I think it's down to $40 now.
Oh, isn't that great?
Yeah, it is.
Wow.
I have two of them, as a matter of fact. Anyway, my current problem situation is my mother is 93. She's in an assisted living facility, and she has slight dementia, and she has difficulty in operating her TV. Yeah. Plus, there's not that much on TV that interests her. What I would like to do is create a system that's simple to operate, and basically it would be one channel. And that channel would be a feed of continuously playing family videos, great-grandchildren.
Oh, what a nice idea.
Well, but to make it simple, that's the problem. One person suggested that we might try to do something like the continuous loop memorial videos that funeral homes use. But I think those are DVDs.
I could tell you how to do this pretty cheaply if you have any computer ability. There's a $35 computer, $35 called a Raspberry Pi.
Okay.
Pi, raspberry like the fruit.
Oh, right. Okay.
Okay. It's little. It's two. It's tiny. You could fit it in a pack of cigarettes. Don't, but you could. All right. Let's say an Altoid tin. How about that? It has all the hardware you need to run an operating system called XBMC. In fact, there's a version for Raspberry Pi. So you download this software. You put it on a micro SD card. So you'd need to buy a micro SD card. It'll boot into like what looks like a Roku or something. And you can put on that all of your videos on this little SD card. And you can set it up so that when you turn on the machine, she doesn't have to do anything. It just starts playing those videos and it goes through them over and over and over and over again. So for under $50, you could actually build a little machine. And by the way, the Raspberry Pi has a connector to connect to a TV.
Is it the HDMI port?
Yep. Older Raspberry Pis have composite. Those are $25. The new one has HDMI.
Great.
You could buy a DVD player and loop it over and over, make a DVD and loop it over and over. But that's going to cost you more, obviously. It might be easier if you don't have any computer skills.
Okay, let's throw another element in there. Is there any way that you think it would be possible to, say, update, put new videos to the grandkids?
Without having to go there.
She does have Wi-Fi and internet access in her room. Do you think that might be possible?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've got an operating system there. There's another one, by the way, the chat room is telling me. There's Plex, P-L-E-X, is also available. And Plex could do that. So rasplex.com, R-A-S-P-L-E-X.com. Plex can play videos from a variety of sources, including the cloud. So you could have a Google Drive or a Microsoft OneDrive or a Dropbox in the cloud. You could control what's on there, so you could put new videos on there all the time, and it would be able to play.
You're amazing, Leo.
Wouldn't that be cool? For under $50.
We'll try to do.
You know, it's a good project. Do you kind of like this stuff? Are you kind of interested in this stuff?
I'm always challenged by it. I'm always trying to do things that I have no idea what I'm doing. So this is a prime example. But it'll spur me.
It'd be a fun thing. It'd take you no more than a weekend. It'd be a fun thing to kind of play around with. You want to get it working at home, obviously. Then you bring it in and you set it up for Mom. You say, Mom, from now on, you're just going to see your family. I think that's a beautiful idea.
I hope that it will be. She does get bored because she has trouble even carrying on conversations with people, and this would be a great.
It seems like that would be just exactly what she would want.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. I think it's a nice idea. You know, somebody should make this.
Exactly.
This could be a business for you. Because honestly, I think you could put this in a little box. You could sell it for $100. People would buy that for $100, and you'd make double your money. And that seems like a decent margin. This would be a business. I think somebody should make a business out of this little Raspberry Pi. Endless. It's kind of like the old, slideshow screens. You'd get those little tablets. Picture frames. Leo LaPointe, the tech guy.
Do they have other sound effects?
Tons. It's all phone stuff.
So, like, you could find a champagne cork.
No. Leo LaPointe, the tech guy. No. This is just phone recordings. Heather and I were talking because somebody in the chat room says, you know, your phone number doesn't work. Of course it works. 8888 Ask Leo. If it didn't work, could I say that on the radio? I don't think so. But, unfortunately... this younger generation has never heard a busy signal, have they? Why would you hear a busy signal? Everybody has a call waiting. You just would never hear a busy signal. So, yes, it works, but what you're getting is called a busy signal. It means the lines are all tied up. And you might even be getting a busy signal that is a weird one called a fast busy. That means the trunk is tied up. So there's, you know, a big fat pipe that goes to the phone company and then, is divided up into little tributaries like a river and and everybody ends up with a number. But because this show is heard in 200 cities around the country and all over the world on the internet, and we only have six lines, so you're almost guaranteed to get a busy signal. And it's not unusual for the trunk. I don't know how many calls a trunk can handle, maybe 1,000, but it's easy to fill that up. So then you'll not only, you won't get a busy signal, you get a trunk busy, fast busy, which you probably never heard of or heard before. But it's that, so it's, yes, it's working. If this phone line weren't working, could I do this? Steve in Hermosa Beach, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Leo, how are you?
I'm well, how are you?
I'm doing well. You've been a big help in the past, and thanks for working on this weekend.
You know, I don't mind working on holiday weekends or any week. I've been working weekends almost my whole radio life.
Yeah.
And holidays, too. That's what, if you work in radio, that's when you work. But I don't mind. I like it. Because I'm hanging with my friends, talking about stuff I like. This isn't work. This is digging ditches. That's work. This is fun.
I understand. Well, glad you're here, because I have a great project for this weekend, I think. I've got two problems. I'm going to address the first one first. I have Fios 5050.
Nice.
Fiber, yes.
Very nice.
However, everybody tells me my Wi-Fi is slow. And what I'm considering is bringing in the Wi-Fi, or bringing in the Fios through their router, and then using my own Wi-Fi router. Does this make sense?
Who's they?
A couple of computer guys said that the router and Wi-Fi that is supplied by Verizon is just...
Oh, they don't like that that Verizon-supplied router.
Right, they like the speed. It's just use that as the pipe to bring it in and then port it to a Linksys or a Cisco or something like that.
A lot of people... I recommend that often. So you have to use the... Sometimes they call it a modem. You have to use the device that connects to the fiber or on a cable, the cable modem, or on DSL, the DSL modem. That device is what demodulates or modifies whatever it's getting into something that's called data.
Right.
And unfortunately, a lot of times Verizon does this. Almost everybody does it now. They provide you not just with the modem, but with a router, and often with a Wi-Fi router. And, you know, that you're leasing it for $5-$10 a month. But at the same time, it's not the newest, greatest gear. So what you really need is their cable modem, or their, in your case, their fiber modem. You do have to use that. Is it an Action Tech? I can't remember what. I think it's Action Tech for Verizon. So you can, if it has an Ethernet port coming out of the back of it, you can absolutely use your router and your Wi-Fi or both. But you need to have an Ethernet port coming out of the back of it. I'm sure you do.
Yeah, it does, and it's been replaced a couple times. It goes bad every few 6 months or so.
Yeah, so you don't really want to. That tells you you don't want to use it as a router.
Okay, so just bring the signal in from the coax and then use one RJ45 to go to my Wi-Fi, which I can put in a higher, better position.
Now, there are some little things you might have to think about. For instance, the router may be built into the Action Tech modem, probably is, and it's doing what we call NAT, Network Address Translation. Sometimes it's DHCP, you know that. You obviously, you know the terms. So you don't want to do double DHCP. You don't want your Wi-Fi router to do network address translation. It's already being done by the Fios thing. If you can turn the Fios NAT off, that would be one solution. But probably just let it continue to do what it's doing.
Okay.
And just tell the router, Wi-Fi or dedicated, to not to do NAT. To be we call that a bridge mode. So most routers will say bridge mode or something like it. And that means don't do the address stuff. You were already getting addresses. Just do the handoff. Just do the Wi-Fi.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think that actually isn't a bad solution. Depending on what the Action Tech device that you got from Fios is, you may have to disable. For instance, if it has Wi-Fi, you definitely want to just go in it and disable Wi-Fi. Did they give you a login to your Fios router?
Yes.
Okay. So go in and browse around, see what it's doing. Definitely disable Wi-Fi if you're going to use another Wi-Fi. You don't want two of them doing that.
No, and if that'll help the speed. Now, I have a two-year-old Wi-Fi router. I can spend the $70-$80 and get a new one. Is it worth it to get the new one?
Try the old one, see how well it works. Routers are dumb, cheap computers. They have processors, they have memory, they have storage. They have firmware and operating system, but they're cheap. They're commoditized products. So a couple of things. They don't get updated very often.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Linksys or somebody like that, they're not motivated to fix their routers. And unfortunately, and this has been happening a lot, lots of routers have security flaws, which you'll never get fixed. For instance, that push button thing, the WPS that links it automatically, you don't have to do any. That is so horrifically flawed that anybody can get into your router from just sitting on the curb. And on some routers, you can disable it. In fact, you can on Linksys, but it doesn't do anything. It's still there. So getting a new router often is the only way to fix security problems.
Okay.
It also, generally, they'll be, especially for Wi-Fi, you know, you're now going to get the latest Wi-Fi instead of, you know, there's the first was 802.11, then it was B, then it was G, there was A in between somewhere, then there was N, and now we're at AC. AC is better.
Okay.
It will work with newer stuff that supports AC, will be much faster. But do remember that wireless is never going to be as fast as wired.
Right.
It's usually nominally about 50%.
Yeah, I run the wire on my desktop solution and then just the Wi-Fi for the phone and the second computer and things like that.
Somebody, Archandra, in our chat room is giving me a link, which I'll put in the show notes at techguylabs.com, to a FAQ about Verizon Fios and various router configuration possibilities. This is exactly what you want. So option 1 through 3 leads the ActionTech as a primary router. An added user router is secondary. Options 4 through 7 replace the ActionTech with a different primary router. Options 9 and 10, they give you 10 options. Set the user router as primary, replacing the ActionTech with a MoCA bridge for coax data. So there are a lot of they actually have to give you a chart showing you all the possibilities. This is exactly what you want. You're obviously very technical, so this will be great for you. Good resource, and thank you, Archandra, for that link. Broadbandreports.com.
Beautiful.
Hey, thanks.
Can I ask you a follow-on?
Yes, indeed.
My expensive smart computer has problems booting up about once a week.
Yeah.
I have a Lenovo X1.
Nice. Love it.
Nice computer. I don't like the adaptive keyboard. It's just really a pain. But great for traveling, great for moving around, and great when it's in the dock. About once a week, it just won't boot. And if I go into, you know, hit F1 and go into the boot menu, I can do the repair, I can do the restore, and then it'll come back.
But that's terrible. You shouldn't have to repair your Windows installation once a week. That's not right.
Well, I think it's related to Chrome. Chrome gets hung up when it shuts down a lot.
Well, that could be, but it should not boffin your operating system.
I wouldn't think.
Try it without Chrome, but I think more likely your hard drive has some flaky spots on it. Yeah, hard drive failure, even on a new system, and that's a fairly new system, is not unusual at all. And the problem with that is you'll get corrupted areas.
Okay.
And they won't be reliable. You know, this is there's an $80 program my friend Steve Gibson created called SpinRite. That's what SpinRite does. It goes through the drive very thoroughly and marks off sectors that can't be read and write reliably. That would be one way to, I think, to fix this problem. It's $80, though. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. That's the phone number. We continue on with the phone calls, you see. Going to Derek in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hi, Derek.
Hey, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. I need your help, and it is a stupid question.
Yay! I celebrate that. You know, there's a couple of reasons. First of all, as I said, everybody, you know, is too shy to ask what they think is a dumb question. It's the question everybody else wants to know. But also, it makes me look smart. The dumber the question, the smarter I look.
Oh, yeah, I can tell you how to do that. It's very simple.
So we're a small business here in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I'm going to buy a computer and create a website. I don't know where to start. There are a lot of website creation places, and I don't know which one to pick. We'd really like to have something that gives us a presence so that our customers can visit us and see the store, but also that folks can buy online and it's secure.
Every business, period, should have a website. That's, you know, if I want a plumber, I'm going to maybe look them up in the Yellow Pages or whatever, but I am absolutely going to see if they have a website so I can learn more about them. That is kind of like the nowadays in business baseline. Now, you're selling online, e-commerce. That's great. That's even better. That means you can have customers all over the world.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. So I think this is huge. So the question is how you do it. And it's a lot easier than it used to be. Let's put it that way. But there are a variety of choices. You could go to a company like Shopify or BigCommerce. These are companies that do that specialize in this. If you go to BigCommerce.com and look at the website, you'll see that what they do is provide websites with online stores to businesses. They have a site designer. It's simple. They can help you with marketing and stuff like that. And you pay a fee. You know, that's probably the easiest, especially for somebody who doesn't want to become a web expert. And you, and believe me, that's a bottomless well of money and time.
Okay.
So somewhere like there's Shopify, BigCommerce, Yahoo has done this for a long time. Yahoo Commerce. Those sites are make it very simple. The negative on those sites is they're not as flexible. But that you know, if you're probably that doesn't matter. You're not, you know, if you look at like Tesla or Ford, if you're a big company, you want to have a custom site, but you have the money to pay somebody to in-house to be a designer, or you go to an out-of-house person, you design it. So, you know, that's what we do for our sites because, you know, while I have some expertise, I used to do these sites. It got to the point where it was a big enough business that we wanted to go to a professional website design house and have professional hosting.
And you find it pretty easy to switch over if it does become
absolutely, yeah. Well, that's I shouldn't say absolutely. Once you go to BigCommerce, for instance, you're kind of in their ecosystem. Your name is not going to change. First, you know, you're going to get a name, and that's used. You own that, by the way, and make sure you do.
You have that.
Yeah, don't ever go to anybody who says, oh, no, don't worry, I'll buy the domain name. That means they own it. That's not what you want.
Understood.
But you own it, so it is easy in the sense that you can go to another company, set up a site, and then flip a switch, and suddenly your domain name goes to this new company. That's simple.
Gotcha.
If you put a lot of content on that site, it might be a little bit more tricky to get it out. Depends. Some sites are easier. You know, one of our advertisers, Squarespace, is a great place to do if you want to get – it's the next step of your involvement, though, because you now are going to design the site. They have tools, but you're going to spend more time designing it. They have e-commerce, but it's a little more on – burden's a little more on your shoulders. Sounds like you don't want to do that. Sounds like you just want to have a great store online.
That's exactly what I want.
Yeah. So
and for me to be smart enough to do it.
Right. So I would start with BigCommerce or Shopify. Yeah. And they'll give you a lot of help. I mean, they're designed for a small business person who's not a geek to get them online, to get them a website, and to get them in shopping. And if you're not doing shopping, there's no reason to use them. They're for having e-commerce. Squarespace provides all those same services, but it's somewhat more do-it-yourself. And for some people, they prefer that because they want a site that really looks unique.
Understood. I'm going to look into all of them, and I can't thank you enough.
You're welcome. I think any of those three would be a good choice. What do you sell?
We do home lighting, custom tables.
Perfect. You got to have a site. Any business nowadays has to have a site. It's like if you think of it as nothing more than a brochure. Now, there's a lot more you can do, because once you're online, you can, for instance, one great thing to do, if you have an area of expertise, you're an expert on home lighting solutions, write a blog on the site. It's part of the site, but it gives it new content and kind of, you know, push yourself to every week or more if you can, put up an article on home lighting, getting the best out of your home lighting solutions. I don't know what it is. You know, you're the expert. But something helpful, something people would be interested in, not a lot of sell. I was talking to the author of a book, an old friend, Peter Friedman. He wrote a book called The CMO's Social Media Handbook. This is using social media to market. And one of the things he says, and they do with their clients, is only 10 or 20% of your content that you put out there should be in any way related to selling. You know, you want to do is have a conversation with your customers and support them. And that's whether it's a website, Twitter, Facebook is a great place. Everybody, you know, start with a website. Next thing is you should have a Facebook page for your business. And on that page, this would actually be a great book to get. It's published by Live World. And I'll put a link in the show notes to it, the CMO's Social Media Handbook. But it talks about how to interact with your audience without seeming like you're just there to sell them stuff, really to have but you want to have a relationship with them. And a lot of it is you know, devote 80% of your content to actual valuable stuff for them. It can really make a big difference in building a business. It's very, very valuable. Our show today, we should, you know, it's funny because I kind of am allergic to marketing. I'm terrible at marketing myself. I don't like marketing. And what I don't, I kind of, when I get a little funny when I feel like people are trying to pitch me. And yet at the same time, you got to do it. You're always marketing. You're always saying, in a good way, you're always saying, you know, here's who I am. Here's what I do. Here's my brand. Here's what I offer. It doesn't have to be a hard sell. But at the same time, it's funny. I don't like to talk about it too much. But this is a good – Peter's training me elsewhere otherwise. It's called the CMO's Social Media Handbook, a step-by-step guide for leading marketing teams in the social media world. It's for big companies like giant companies. But I think the lessons are valuable all around. Great guy named Gary Vaynerchuk. He has a wine store in, I think, New Jersey. He does a lot of videos, a lot of talks about this kind of thing. He's great, too. There's a lot of good information out there. Back to the phones we go. Alan, Los Angeles, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Thanks, Leo. You should market yourself as the guy who takes a lot of semi-dumb calls.
That's my brand. Thank you.
Whatever works. I got a question for you. I'm a semi-disgruntled Sprint customer, mm-hmm. and they want to upgrade me to Galaxy S6 and give me a really good deal, and I'm reading mixed reviews.
I love the Galaxy S6. I'll tell you the pros and the cons.
Yeah.
It is currently, I use the Edge. It's my go-to phone. I would say the Edge is the prettiest of the two, but the problem with the Edge, and this is one of the negatives, is I keep hitting the screen by accident because it goes wraps around the front, and so I keep accidentally clicking things. So maybe get the regular S6. Best camera ever. I think it's fabulous. I had to redo it. I had to erase it and start over because it was getting a little laggy. But I think this is the best phone out there. But let's take a break and come back because I want to talk more. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The show today, the podcast today, brought to you by Gazelle. I've talked about Gazelle before. I hope you understand what a great service Gazelle provides for those of us who buy gadgets. Instead of just throwing it in a drawer, that's like throwing a $100 bill in the drawer, just leaving it there. Gazelle will buy your old gadget. And the great part is, if you're going to sell it to Gazelle, you get 30 days. It's just a quote that's good, locked in for 30 days. So find out. There's no obligation to go to gazelle.com and say, oh, yeah, I got my old BlackBerry or my HTC. I got my LG phone, my Motorola. When I go to that G5, you better believe I'm going to go say, hey, you want this T-Mobile? Let's see what this is worth. My T-Mobile Samsung Galaxy S6. Well, they don't even see nobody's selling it yet. So new. But let's say it was an S5. And it's in good condition, $150. Now, here's the deal. You go, okay, good. And then get the rest of the stuff. That's good for 30 days. When you say, finally, okay, I got the new phone, I've transferred the data over, then you pull the trigger. Gazelle will send you a box prepaid for the postage for everything that you're sending them. They turn it around fast. If you forget to wipe your data, don't worry. They'll do that for you. They'll even upgrade your offer if the phone's in better shape than you thought. We've had that happen multiple times, so I know that happens. And they'll send you a check or a PayPal credit or an Amazon gift card. They bump that up five percent rather. So that's more than $5. That's a good deal. I want you to try it. Gazelle.com. Now, people always say to me, well, what happens to the stuff I sell on Gazelle? They take the very best stuff and they sell it back. So this is the newest thing on Gazelle. Gazelle will sell pre-owned products. There are two conditions. So if you, by the way, they'll sell cell phones. Wait a minute, I'm on sell. Let's buy. The iPhone 6, iPad mini, Galaxy S5, or iPhone 6. Let's say I want to get an iPhone 6. And there's two conditions on everything that you buy. I could have certified like new, that's like new, or save a little extra, certified good. And that means there'll be some gentle signs of wear, that kind of thing. Gazelle.com. No matter what you buy on Gazelle, I can guarantee you everything there is going to work great. They've all been put through a rigorous 30-point inspection, so they're fully functional. And, of course, you have 30 days risk-free return policy. So you're never on the hook here. It is a great way. If you lose your phone, you break your phone, your kids lose their phone, get a new one at Gazelle or a like new one at Gazelle. GAZELLE.com. Free shipping, fast processing, cash in your pocket, or a new phone. What's your iPhone worth? Take a minute and go to Gazelle.com and find out. Gazelle, and we thank him so much for supporting the Tech Guy podcast. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartwatches, smartphones, and all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or New Jersey. That's right, Josh. It's New Jersey, isn't it, that we are toll free from? I believe so. Josh isn't talking to me. 8888 Ask Leo. If you're outside those areas, though, you can still use Skype and reach us. Skype out will call that number, and it's toll free, so it won't cost you anything. Plus one, 8888 Ask Leo. We were talking before the break. Sorry I had to put you on hold, Alan. Alan says he's none too happy with Sprint, but now they're making him a good offer with the Galaxy S6. I like the Samsung Galaxy S6. I was just talking during the break about some of the features. I think it's a remarkable phone. Best camera I've ever used. That includes the iPhone 6. Best screen I've ever used. That includes everything else. It's 577 dots per inch, which is overkill. Insane. I don't think there's anything higher res than this screen. So it's gorgeous in that respect. Unfortunately, the higher res screen, the faster processor in here, the very fast graphics processor, means battery life is a little weak, a little anemic, about 10 to 11 hours for me. It's going to differ for everybody. But because it supports quick charging and wireless charging, by the way, quick charging means you can get it right back to 100% in about an hour. So that's, you know, means if you're going out at night, you can charge it during dinner and you'll be fine. It's not great if you're on an airplane, you know, you're flying somewhere and you got an 18-hour day of travel. That's not going to be so good. I actually bought a external battery that supports quick charging. One company I found, AUKEY, Aukey, was on Amazon, about $30. It'll charge a phone three or four times. I keep that in my briefcase. It's not huge, and that's another solution. But you know, that's a compromise you have to make for this phone. There are phones like the Samsung phone, the Galaxy Note 4, that have removable batteries. The LG G4, which is about to come out, has removable battery. That's nice. It means you can bring a second battery with you. You run out of juice, you put in a new battery. But now I'm worried that you don't like Sprint.
No.
I mean, why stick with a company you're unhappy with?
Well, mostly because of the data plan.
Okay. Yeah, pricing is certainly one of the important criteria. You know, Sprint's customer service is not ideal.
No.
I remember leaving Sprint 10 years ago and never looking back. The other reason, though, is where I live, Sprint doesn't have a great signal. To me, the most important thing is how fast is the data? How good is the signal where I go? And I'll put up with bad customer service and even exorbitant pricing if I've got good speeds.
Yeah, definitely an issue. But I got a question for you in regards to the S6 Active. What do you know about that? Apparently, it's a newer version coming out that has a better battery and water resistant.
Right. Yeah, this is not water resistant. So Samsung of late has done this every time they put out a new flagship phone. They then slowly come out with variations. The Active, they have a Mini. And so they've done that with the S5, and I'm not surprised at all to hear they're going to do it with the S6. The Active is exactly what you described. It's waterproof. It's a little bit more robust. For me, waterproof is not important. If you drop your phone in the ocean, waterproof or not, it's not going to be good, or the toilet. It's not like I go swimming with my phone.
Well, I don't care about as much the water resistant part as it's an improved battery, what I've read, and also a micro SD slot.
Wow. Oh. Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for that. Now, they sell this phone in a variety of formats, so you can go up to 128 gigs of storage. In some ways, that's better than having an SD card.
Really?
Well, the problem with SD cards is it's always a little tricky for the operating system to handle another drive. If it's internal, it's not. It's not as much of a difficulty. The advantage of an micro SD card, if you use it, is you could take it out, put stuff on it on your computer, put it back in the phone, stuff like that. But I don't know many people who do that. It's just most people think of it as a way to extend the size of the phone. And 128 gigs is pretty darn big.
A lot of pictures, though. Which one would you recommend as far as the gigabytes?
I got 64, and it's fine for me. But see, I turn on Google Plus photo uploading, and so it's always uploading. So if I decide to delete pictures, it's not a loss. They're going to be available to me, even on the phone, by just opening up the Google Plus app. So okay. I no longer worry so much about storage, because so much of my stuff, music, video, pictures, they're all stored in the cloud now. And I just what I really need is, and this is me, is data speed and and unlimited data. And Sprint does a very good job of that. So that might be a compelling reason to stick with them.
Do you think it's worth to wait for the active one because of the
I think to my knowledge, the active one is not going to be available from Sprint. It's only going to be available at AT&T.
That was my concern. That's why I wanted to know what you thought.
Yeah. That would mean a change of carrier as well as a change of phone. Here's what I would look at. Sprint's going to offer the LG G4, slightly bigger. The S6 is 5.1 inches. That'll be 5.5 inches.
That's getting big.
Okay, too big for you.
Yeah, it's getting bigger.
Yeah, so the Note would be out as well. But those bigger phones, the advantage is you can pry the back off and put a battery in. That's the advantage, right? The Active will be the same, I think the same size as the S6. So if that 5, and I agree with you, 5 inches or 5.1, that's just about right.
Yeah, any more than that, and you're starting to carry around extra.
Yeah.
But a quick question on the, any new news on the newer version of the Surface Pros at all?
No, I think we're pretty confident there will be a Surface Pro 4, the next generation, when Windows 10 comes out. It's almost certain that Microsoft will at the same time say, and here's our new computer. And I think it'll be a good choice. It'll have the newer chipsets. I expect Microsoft to make some improvements. Windows 10, we now think, will be out. And I know we've changed our tune quite a bit, but I just listened to my experts, Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. They're Windows gurus. They're the kings. And they now say end of July is very likely when it's going to come out.
Okay.
So you don't have long to wait.
Good. Well, the question is, are the Surface Pros 4 going to be that much better than the 3, or is it just going to lower the price on the 3 and you should buy it?
Either way, you're a golden, right? You get to choose. You get to choose. I think Microsoft has done a very good job, and the Surface Pro 3 is really a much improved over the previous Surfaces. I even think the Surface 3 is good. So, you know, the lower end Surface. Yeah, I think they have that's typical of Microsoft. It takes them a few generations to really ace it. But people really seem to love the Surface. Everybody I talk to has a Surface Pro 3 is very happy, and I would imagine the same would happen even more so with the 4. And by the way, Windows 10 is great. The one there's a couple of things that might induce you to wait for a Windows 10 specific hardware, whether it's a Surface Pro 4 or for some other manufacturer. There's this Windows Hello, which is a new sign-on capability built into Windows 10, that will allow you with a Windows Hello enabled camera to do very good face recognition as one of your sign-ons. Even I think iris recognition. That camera is more like a Kinect. It'll have depth perception. There are no computers now sold with that kind of camera, but I expect the Surface Pro 4 will be. There may be new. I'm not sure, but there may be new keys as well. Sometimes that happens. It certainly did with Windows 8. So there may be some reasons to wait if you're going to go Windows 10, and I think everybody should. Might be some reason to wait for a Windows 10 specific machine.
Okay, thanks.
Anyway, it's soon enough that, you know, why not?
Yeah.
All right. I think you'd like the S6. Go try it. Go take a look. This thing is a little jewel of a phone. Somebody just said in the chat room that the sales that reportedly are not good for this. That's bad news for Samsung. Their Galaxy S5 was a major flop. But it was so, I didn't like it. It was not much improved over the S4. I think S6 is much improved over the S5. The fingerprint reader is fantastic. Works just like Apple's. It is an incredibly gorgeous screen, and it's just a great camera. But maybe, you know, people once bitten, twice shy. Maybe people just, the Samsung brand no longer has the cachet it used to. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. It's a message for our caller. You might as well jump. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, or as Mike B, apparently he's an assembly language programmer, says JMP. Jump! Leo Laporte, that's a, boy, that is an in-joke. That's a geeky joke. Just forget I said it. Mickey, our next caller from Studio City. Hi, Mickey.
Hi, Leo. First time caller, long listener. I'm so excited to talk to you.
That's great. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah. I have a cool question. Well, twofold, I believe.
Okay.
I recently purchased a Samsung smart TV. It's LED 5 Series 525D, I believe is the model number.
Okay, yeah.
And I took it home because I wanted to be able to watch HBO Go and, you know, all those apps.
I feel when you buy a TV, you should always take it home. Leaving it in the store, it's not satisfying.
It's pretty good. I know. but I basically brought it home and then realized, oh, I can't get HBO Go or Showtime Go as an app on it. And unfortunately, I called Samsung and they said, your model does not have it.
Yeah, and you know, the problem with smart TV is that the TV companies, it's just a sideline for them. And so they don't update it much. And I have a Samsung TV as well where they just disabled the smart apps. So the whole thing is, you're almost always better off just getting a Roku. Just get a Roku.
Well, that was my question. Roku or Apple TV?
The only reason, I have both. And I have a lot of other ones, Android TV and stuff too. The only reason to prefer the Apple TV is if you buy stuff on iTunes. Because it's the only device that will play iTunes movies and TV shows on your TV.
Now, with Roku, the Roku 3, are the apps updatable? Or?
Absolutely. In fact, they update them. It's kind of more like, unlike the Apple TV where it's the icons on the Apple TV or whatever Apple gives you, and that's that. There are thousands of Roku channels. You have a store you can go into and you say, I want this and that. In fact, that's one of the first things you'll do because you'll go in and you say, I want to install HBO Go on here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And now the thing about HBO Go as opposed to HBO Now, Go requires you already have a cable subscription.
Yeah, which I do.
And you pay for HBO. And your cable company allows you to use HBO Go. For instance, for a long time, I'm Comcast Xfinity. Comcast would not allow you to use HBO Go on a Roku. You could use it on Apple, but not on a Roku. And that's up to them. They have just recently, about 2 months ago, they changed that. I don't know what was going on, but maybe Roku paid them money. I don't know. But HBO Go started working. So in order to use HBO Go, you have to actually log in to your cable company, their website, and authorize it. And Xfinity wouldn't for the longest time. Now they do. But you should make sure your cable company. Who's your cable company?
DirecTV, and they definitely do.
Okay, good. All right.
Yeah. My other question is, if you had to recommend a smart TV, do you think I need a smart TV?
No.
I need a TV back. And
well, you already have it. The smart stuff is just extra.
Okay.
The one reason you want a smart TV is because you want an internet-enabled TV. Because there's all sorts of for updates and things. That's a good idea to be able to connect it to the internet. And that's kind of what smart means. And then they put apps on there like HBO Go, except that you don't have it. But Netflix, you probably have Netflix on there. And it may be easier to watch Netflix right from the TV than it is from a Roku. The thing is, Roku is going to give you always going to give you more. Roku is updated more often. You can get a new Roku device for $99. You don't have to get a whole new TV. So the building in smarts to a TV is something that they're going to do, but they're not going to do it as well as other companies like Apple and Roku are going to do it.
Well, this particular TV also doesn't have mirroring because I was going to try to use, because I already went ahead and bought the Apple TV.
That's another reason to buy an Apple TV. If you use Macs or an iPhone, you can AirPlay stuff to the Apple TV and watch it on your big screen.
Right, but this particular TV says no mirroring is allowed.
It doesn't have anything to do with the TV. If you have an Apple TV, it goes to the Apple TV. The TV doesn't know what's going on.
I can't seem to get it to work. I'll figure it out.
It's not mirroring. So what you haven't? So you did buy an Apple TV.
I did, but I was going to bring it back.
Well, wait a minute now. If one of the things you want to do, you have a Mac, I guess, or an iPad, okay.
Yeah.
If you have Apple devices, if you're in. Now, HBO Go, I don't think supports AirPlay, but you have to be in an app that supports AirPlay.
Mm-hmm.
And if it does, you'll see you can even do it on the phone. There's a little, when you swipe up from the bottom on iOS, you'll see in that control center, you'll see an AirPlay button. You press it and it'll say your Apple TV. It doesn't say the television set. It says the Apple TV. So name it something that you can recognize. You go, oh, there's my Apple TV. You AirPlay to that And then the Samsung, if it's connected, you know, playing back whatever's on the Apple TV, will start playing it.
Okay.
Your TV doesn't have to cooperate, in other words.
It's an Apple TV. Okay.
It goes through the Apple TV. And that's actually, I really misspoke, because the two reasons to have an Apple TV are iTunes, but also this AirPlay thing is great. Because that means anything that you can put on an iPhone or an iPad or a Macintosh, you can put up on the television set. And that's kind of nice.
Right, okay, I'll stick with that then. And I'll probably keep the TV.
Yeah, and if it's HBO Go you want, then, and by the way, only Apple TVs right now do HBO Now, which is their $15 a month product that gives you HBO without a cable subscription, and that is nice.
Yeah.
Then you can just say goodbye, DirecTV, if you wish. If you wish. If you're having trouble, Apple has a good support page for Apple TV at apple.com. But I think now that you understand conceptually what's going on, it has nothing to do with the TV.
Okay.
As long as the Apple TV is connected via HDMI to your new television, which it is, and you're seeing the Apple TV interface, then all you have to do is with your Apple devices go to the Apple TV.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Turns your TV into a Game of Thrones TV, as Bacon Strip in our chat room said. Yeah, there's a good having smart TV is not, to my mind, necessary. But you're going to probably get it if you get a higher end TV. It's just built in. But it's almost always the case that the standalone device is going to do a better job, give you more options. For instance, I'll give you an example. Netflix on your television through your smart TV will never be as good as Netflix on an Apple TV. Apple has their own data center for Netflix. When you're watching Netflix movies, it's the best quality possible on an Apple TV because it's Apple is actually storing the Netflix data locally and putting it up on your Apple TV. Always better than the way the TV works. And in fact, in real life, all my TVs are smart because, you know, that's what they came with. Watching Netflix is never as good looking or as reliable or as fast. The other thing, which I wouldn't expect but is the case, is that the Netflix app is different everywhere. And the Netflix app, once you get used to, for instance, the Apple TV way of doing it, is nicer than it is on the Samsung TV. So there is that as well. It's up to Samsung to kind of update the app and or design it, maybe. I don't know who designs it, but it may be not as good as Netflix or as Roku. But the Roku app looks different than the Apple TV app. I prefer Roku for Amazon. I prefer Apple TV for Netflix. Okay, there you go. That's part of the thing to keep in mind. 8888, ask Leo. There's a lot more ways to do this now that we have Android TV and all sorts of stuff. But I think Roku, if you had to pick one, Roku's great. 8888, ask Leo. The website, techguylabs.com. More of your calls coming up right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, normally Chris Marquardt would be joining us, but he's in Tibet or somewhere, right? He went to, Nepal and Tibet, and he's on a photo expedition. He'll be back in a month. So if you have a question about digital photography, I am not a professional photographer, but I spend like one. That should qualify me, right? I can tell you what cameras to get and so forth. Moving on to Lou in West Covina. Hi, Lou. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, good afternoon, Leo.
Good afternoon.
Thank you for my call today.
Mm-hmm.
I had a quick question. I was looking at purchasing a brand new laptop. I currently have a Dell N5030 that just finally went out on me, so rest in peace to that.
But that's a good feeling, though, because now it's time to get a new one.
Yeah, exactly, after 4 years, right?
Yeah, it's time.
So I'm looking at HP and Dell, and looking at the 2015 stats on laptopmag.com, it seemed that Dell and HP came in second and third.
Yeah, stats aren't going to tell you the whole story. For instance, we had one of those HP, was it a Spectre, the one that they co-designed with Microsoft? We had it in last week, and our reviewer, Miriam Jouar, said, you know, it looks like on paper going to be a great laptop, but then you get it home, and she said, there is one of the keys is always lit with a bright blue LED and you can't turn it off. And it's something like that the paper specs will never tell you. So usability is more than just the processor, the RAM, how much, you know, you pay for the screen and so forth. Mm-hmm. You gotta go a little deeper. And that's one reason, for instance, I'm not crazy about that new HP. It does on paper look great. But that light, she showed me, it's annoying.
And my father actually, he did buy an HP. I know Fry's Electronics had a sale a while back where they had an HP going for very cheap. My father took advantage of that. I didn't.
How's your father like it?
He likes it. It's not bad at all. He says he's not having any problems with it. So not yet, anyway.
I have a little bias, I confess, against HP because for years they loaded up their computers, desktop and laptop, with trialware. It was the messed up computer. I mean, it was horrible. I think they've gotten better. The other prejudice I have, and this might be something more serious, is HP is going through a major reorg. They're going to spin off the PC division.
Oh, wow.
So I'm not sure what that bodes. I don't know. For the future, it may be very good.
Mm-hmm.
What's your price point is would be, I guess, the most important question here.
So I'm not looking for anything like a Mac. That's out of the budget, of course, but I am a PC guy, so I'm still looking at Dell. I know the...
I'm a Dell fan, but this is out of your price range. The best computer I own currently, for Windows anyway, because I do like Macs, is the Dell XPS 13, the brand new one. They did some things that I really like. First of all, it's a 13-inch... screen in an 11-inch body because there's no bezel or very little bezel around the edge of the screen. It's a gorgeous screen. The keyboard's excellent. I love the fit and finish and feel of it. So that's my current Windows choice is Dell.
Yeah, and that's what I'm looking for. Something that's I'm going to go ahead and get my computer from Fry's Electronics because I've been a long-time customer.
They carry – there's one other thing chat room's reminding me. Fry's carries Asus, A-S-U-S.
Okay.
Those are pretty good. Acer, I don't know if they carry Acers. For the computer that preceded this Dell was an Acer S7. They still make it, and I think is the thinnest Windows machine out there. It's amazing, and I really love it. So there are good choices. HP would not be the top of my list, I'll be honest. I know they're I think they are still the number one PC manufacturer, but...
Correct. And I was looking at computers like Acer and Asus. I hadn't done too much research on them. Like I said, I mean, I feel a little bit more comfortable to go with a Dell computer. I felt that my...
Well, that's what you had. Did you feel like the support was good from Dell? Because that's really the big difference nowadays.
Yeah, the support is great. The speed was great. It was great for the money that I got for it. I spent about $400 on it at Best Buy. So it was good to me, these
Well, it's time to replace the old Inspiron, and if you were happy with Dell, I certainly, I'm a fan. That's what I buy. It's what we buy in the business office, too. We use Macs often for the hosts. Most of them use Macs, but for the business office where they want Windows because they're using Excel and stuff, it's all Dell.
Yeah, and that's...
In fact, our editors, even in the back room, the people who edit the video, we have 6 edit stations. They're all Dell, the Dell Big Dell workstations.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Dell is a great company. I'm looking at a couple others, which are the i35-31 and then the i35-42. Yeah. Those seem a little more in my price range. I also don't know if I should go refurbished or new. I know refurbished sometimes.
Here's where I'd caution you. Do not get refurbished from anybody but the manufacturer.
Okay.
If you get refurbished from a third party, that means a third party refurbished it, and it may be, who knows. When the manufacturer sells refurbished, admittedly, the prices aren't as low, but most of the time, that's just an open box. They can't sell as new.
Mm-hmm.
And you will get the full manufacturer warranty, and the manufacturer is going to stand behind it. I think that's always better. So don't go to Fry's and buy refurbished. That's not a good idea. I don't know if they're still doing this. They used to refurbish hard drives, quote, refurbish.
Oh, wow.
Not a good idea.
Yeah. And that's always my concern with refurbished items. And I do feel more comfortable if I get it refurbished from the manufacturer itself.
Exactly. You get the warranty. It's manufacturer. It's like buying it from the same thing as a new computer, just a little bit less expensive. And I think that's a good way to go. In fact, I think that's probably the way to go. Don't, go if you can get a refurbished Dell from Dell that matches your needs. That's absolutely the way to go.
Exactly. And okay, so I think I'll go ahead and stay with Dell there, Leo. I feel
right.
More confident. opinion.
Hey, if you have a great experience, no reason not to, right?
Yes.
And
sir.
But and this is, of course, Dell has a disadvantage because they're mostly mail order. Occasionally, you can go in a store and get one or two models you can try. If you can try it, do try before you buy. We would not have known about that HP, weird HP bright light shining in your eyes if we hadn't actually used it. And it's the kind of thing that you can't tell till you use it. The keyboard, the trackpad, how the screen looks.
especially with a laptop. It's if you can try before you buy, I highly recommend it. Although, having said that, I bought the XPS 13 the minute it came out and have been very, very happy about it. SSD, if you can get it. Now, I understand your price point is limited, but a solid-state drive is going to be so much faster. That's always a good choice. I don't like cutting corners too much. You got 4 years out of that old Dell Inspiron. Yeah, it was only $400, $100 a year. That's a good deal. But I think you it's also 4 years that you might have suffered with something that wasn't as good, and you save maybe $50 a year. So you got to really think about it. Sometimes you get what you pay for, especially in technology. The manufacturers know you want cheap. We want cheap machines. But a cheap machine may not be good enough. You know, it may just be cheap. Diana, Laguna Beach, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Oh, hi, Leo. I'm afraid I'm going to fall in that group of dumb phone calls.
No dumb phone calls. They're all great.
There's hundreds of us out here
yes.
in the world that cannot figure out what the heck is happening. I bought a brand new i5. I have from the Apple Store, and the gentleman was nice enough to transition all my materials over for me. And I walked out of the store, looked at my contacts, and do you know that every contact that appeared was not my phone contacts? He had somehow or another accessed my computer.
Yeah, he used the iCloud contacts.
Oh, well, okay. So the problem is now, so he said, so I went back in and said, what the heck? And he said, oh, that all came from the iCloud.
Yeah.
So people are dead. That are in there.
Okay, so here's, I understand. I understand. Let me tell you what, all right.
Yeah.
Let me tell you what happened.
I won't turn it on until you tell me. The iCloud are all turned off everywhere, everything.
Yeah.
Supposed to be my storage.
I tell you what, I got to take a break. Can you hang on for a minute?
I should.
I'll explain what happened. This is confusing because you have stuff in two different places and you're not sure, well, where did that come from? But I can help you solve that. We're going to do that in just a second. And in fact, everybody who uses an iPhone should listen. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. Diana is on the line from Laguna Beach. Diana has an iPhone 5. Bought it brand new. Apple guy did her a favor, he said. copied everything. He set up your phone for you, but he used the data, not from the phone, but from the iCloud. Now, I'll tell you, in a way, he did do you a favor. I know you're calling dead people.
Yes, I am.
And that's not good. That's never good.
The address is also, I don't want the address in my contacts. Yeah.
So here's the thing. Your old iPhone was not backed up. So had you lost the iPhone, your entire contact list would be gone.
Okay.
That's not good.
All right.
So what he assumed, incorrectly, he should have asked, is, mm-hmm. well, she must be backing up to iCloud. That's what everybody does. And so if I get her contact list from the cloud, that should be the same as it was on the phone. It isn't, because you weren't backing up. Now, I recommend what we probably want to do is continue to back up to iCloud. Turn that on and leave that on, because that's a backup. If you don't want to lose your contact list if you lose your phone, because, you could lose your phone. It's not hard.
Okay, so right now, Leah, I went through everybody, took all the dead folks.
Good,
off,
clean it up. That's what I was going to tell you to do.
Yeah, cleaned it all up. Took all the email addresses. I mean, I don't want an email from my contact list. Took it all. Now can I?
But do you ever want that email in any other respect?
I don't email from my phone.
I understand. But what we're doing now is we're creating, and I don't think this is a bad idea, but you're going to have to live with it. We're creating a unified contact list. You must have a Mac, too. Do you have a Mac, too,
My husband's Mac.
Okay. So what by using iCloud, we create a unified list that's the same everywhere. And this is nice. If you add somebody on the phone, it gets added to the cloud, which then adds it to the desktop. The disadvantage is all of the information, including email and street addresses, whatever you've got for that person, is going to be the same across the board everywhere.
Okay.
You can live with that. It's not taking up much space, and it's a small price to pay for having a unified, you really, trust me, you want a unified calendar, unified contacts, because that way
it eliminates confusion, and it's a backup. You can log into iCloud.com. You probably have an Apple account, so you can use that to log into iCloud.com and see all of this stuff. And you can even modify it in the cloud. So I think it's not a bad idea to go there and make sure that that is exactly as you want it to appear. But remember that that's how it will appear everywhere.
Okay, so the dead people that are still, but other people have it. They say, you know, there are people on my list of, you know, the plumbers I don't use anymore.
Yeah, no, I delete people that I'm never going to call again. That's fine.
Yeah, they're all in there, so I should be cleaning that up anyway.
Yeah, and then that's cleaned up, but it will. But remember, it'll be cleaned up everywhere.
It's going. That's fine. But it's good. But I'm going to. I can trust the cloud not to turn around and screw me and send me all these people back again because I'm going to.
Well, I think if you work in the cloud. You know, it is an issue, and this is anytime you have synchronization, you have the risk of duplication and of stuff that's stored in one place but not the other getting propagated everywhere. So that is a challenge. Once you've got it fixed, it will never happen again.
Is there an alternative for those of us that don't want to do that?
The thing to remember is that happens because you have different contact lists.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's why that happens. One has everything, one doesn't. And as soon as you turn on the cloud, as this guy at Apple did, everything's going to mush together. Now you've got a mess. But it's worth cleaning it up. I wish there were one way. You know, it would be nice if you could say, for instance, I want iCloud to be the definitive source. And whatever I do to my contact list on iCloud, I want to be duplicated everywhere.
Right.
I don't think there's a – maybe you can – we have an Apple guru here in the studio. Maybe you can tell me. But I don't think there's a way to do that. That would help this, right? You could say this is definitive. So the manual way to do it is to delete, this is scary, delete contacts everywhere but iCloud, and then let iCloud propagate. Now everything's in sync. Now it's all the same.
Okay.
In a way, that's what the Apple rep did, because by propagating iCloud to your brand new empty iPhone 5, now those two are in sync. The only problem here is the desktop at this point. That may have stuff you don't want, like dead people.
Yes.
Old plumbers and dead people. So I know what you mean, because every once in a while I get to see my contact list. Who is that? I haven't talked to that guy in 25 years.
Hundreds of thousands of us out there. So, but I like to keep that's my husband's kind of desktop thing that he does. And I don't even need his stuff. I'm real happy with what's on.
All right. Well, then you need to create two different Apple accounts.
Okay, that's what I need.
One for him and one for you.
Okay.
And that way, his are being back. And turn on iCloud. You get 5 gigs free. That's plenty. By the way, none of this takes up much space.
Okay.
Contact lists are not what fills up your phone. Photos are, and videos, things like that.
Yes.
But the contact list is, I don't care. I have 3,000
people. I don't have that big of a lot. That's why I was horrified when I got like 3,000 of them. I went, what the
hell? I don't want that. And I understand.
3,000 people.
This always happens, especially the first time you sync, because that's when you get all the duplication. But now you clean it up and you keep it in sync. It's not going to come. They don't. I know they're dead people, but they're not ghosts. They're not going to reappear.
Yeah, they're not coming back.
Ghostly.
So if I turn on the iCloud now, it will only populate with what I have in my own contacts, or is it going to go back to his Mac?
Well, what you do now is you say, okay, hubby, you got that account. That's yours.
Mm-hmm.
And you create a new account. You sign out on your iPhone 5 of your old account. You sign into a new account. I would suggest, before you do that, backing up your contacts. But
yes.
Because the problem is that a new account will have zero contacts.
Gotcha.
So you want to back up your contact list somewhere to a computer, probably to his.
Okay.
And then create a new – sign into a new account that's only yours.
That's
free to do that. And then get your old contact list somewhere in the phone or in the cloud, doesn't matter. And from now on, those will stay in sync. And none of his stuff will appear in your stuff, not his documents, not his calendar, nothing.
Perfect.
Yeah.
He doesn't want mine, and I don't want his.
Yeah.
Okay, so how do I go about doing this? I'm going to.
By the way, this is not a dumb question. I struggle with iCloud all the time. Apple.
Well, I just turn them off. I just find, I can't deal with you people.
Apple's not really good at this, to be honest. I use Google's
And this may be a good solution for you. I use Google's contact list. The other choice is to not sync to iCloud, but to sync to Google's cloud. Hubby sync you. Then you don't have to create a new Apple account. You just sign up for a Google account and have the contacts and the email and the address book go to Google and sync with that. That's what I do.
And I can just sign up.
Yeah, Google knows how to do this stuff, frankly, a little bit better than Apple. Apple has struggled with this since day one.
That might solve the 4,000 emails that I have on my phone.
We call that declaring email bankruptcy. If you haven't done anything with those emails in, you know, months, chances are you're not going to. Just delete it all. And you can even send out an email to everybody in your contact list saying, I am declaring email bankruptcy. If I have not responded to an email from you, send it again because I just deleted it.
But it does not let you do that. I've been on pages and pages and pages, as have all of my friends, trying to figure out how to get rid of these people, and it's got to be one at a time. One of these.
Well, that's where having a desktop interface to it makes it easier. And you could do this with either iCloud or Google Drive, Google Cloud, which is you go to your desktop and you can mass delete. Now you can get rid of everything fast. It's hard on the phone, I agree. Apple does not make that easy.
Oh, it's awful.
Yeah.
So if I set up a Google account, I can just, I mean, that's so much easier for me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is your phone the way you want it to be? Is anything the way you want it to be?
The phone's great. My contacts, of course, it took me hours. Everybody's alive and I'm happy with it. I just can't get rid of
So you're going to go into the settings on your iPhone and where it says... you can see all the different accounts, right? One of your accounts is an iCloud account. There's a checkbox next to it that says contacts.
Okay.
You want to stop syncing contacts. Actually, if you do that, though, it might delete them. Before you do this, set up a Google account. Set up syncing with the Google account so the contacts from your phone will get copied up to the Google Cloud. Verify that by going to contacts.google.com and making sure everything you want is there. Then you can turn off your iCloud account on your phone and just continue to sync with your Google account.
Okay.
And then your husband's stuff doesn't get into your stuff. You can go to contacts.google.com and very quickly clean it up or validate it. They've just added a deduplicator, which is great, which will merge duplicate entries. There's a lot of, I think they do a better job, frankly, than iCloud does.
I want to kind of, as most of us do, we want to just separate this out.
Yes.
So it's just too many to sit there and take 2,000.
And don't feel bad that this is complicated. It is. It's not easy. It is not intuitive. And Apple has done a great job of explaining it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. This is the place where we talk about, you know, geeky stuff. You don't have to be a geek to listen. We try to speak English. I try to avoid geek speak. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. 888-827-5536. We could talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, all that. You know, all that kind of stuff. Anything with a chip in it. 8888-ASK-LEO. Let's go. Real quickly, because we were talking to Diana about her... crazy, you know, she's got dead people in her contacts because it's been syncing with other, you know, with her husband's computer and stuff. I just checked, and you can do this. Might be the right way to do it. The Apple Genius, when she got a new phone, unfortunately, synced it from iCloud, which means that everything that was stored on the iCloud, including all of her husband's contacts she had for years gone by, everything was backed up to her phone. She said, I don't want that. You can log into iCloud. You know, if you have an Apple account, log in iCloud.com with that Apple account, and you'll see your contacts there. That would probably be the place to clean everything up. You know, delete stuff you don't want. Merely get it shined up, buff it up. It's perfect. It might take a little while. I have thousands of contacts. It might take a little while. But then if you select everything there and you just do a Command A, that'll do it. There's a little gear, and it says export your contacts as V cards. This is a kind of a standard, like a calling card standard, a standard format for contact information. You can do that, and you're going to get one file with all of that stuff in it, and almost any other contact solution will import it. That's your backup. Put that on Carbonite. Put that on a USB key. Save that. That's your pristine, beautiful contact list. And from now on, if you ever get this duplication or whatever, you can just restore that. and go back. You can import those all. So you need one place where you can clean it up and then export it so you can use it everywhere else. And then one of our visitors in the studio today is an Apple expert. Connor works at a Best Buy store. He said, what was the name of that app? We'll put this in the show notes. My Contacts Backup is an app you can get at the iTunes store. And download My Contacts Backup, and that is another way to do it. That will take all the contacts on your phone or your iPad and email it to you as a file. And now that's another – I think that's a great way to do it. Now you've got – since I think it was Diana said her phone is the clean, perfect contacts. Now you got it there. That's a great place. You could at that point go to your iCloud, delete everything, and upload – the contact list from your computer, and that would become your, you know, perfect contact list. This happens anytime you've got multiple sources and you do a sync. It's going to be a mess. But in theory, if you clean it all up and then you synchronize and you keep everything synchronized, you won't have this happen again. It's a one-time pain, but you get it done. Let's move on. Michael's in Santa Monica, California. He's our next caller. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Leo. How you doing today?
I'm well. How you doing?
Good. I'm doing okay. I'm hoping you can solve a kind of a problem.
All right.
I've been using a 2009 iMac running Yosemite, and I'm giving up the ghost. It just isn't working for me anymore. And I was just about to hit the buy button on the 2013 27-inch refurbished iMac from Apple when I learned that Apple just lowered the price of the 5K 27-inch.
They did.
Yes. And it didn't seem to be a big newsflash. I mean, I just happened to stumble on it.
You know, not everything Apple does gets the full keynote treatment. And in this case, they did put out a press release, but that's about it. So they did update. They updated the 5K iMac and they dropped the price. And I think it is highly recommended. It is gorgeous.
Good. My only concern with it was I understand it's hard if you want to upgrade the hard drive at some point. I understand that.
Yeah, don't consider it an upgradable hard drive. I think the only thing you can upgrade is the RAM.
So then if you would recommend getting that machine over a 2013. Is that what you would say?
Oh, yeah. It's all about the screen.
Yeah.
So if you feel like you like the screen, you don't need a high-res screen, no big deal. But I tell you, that screen is gorgeous, and you can all. The weird thing is, because Apple did some very specialized, dedicated hardware in that iMac, you can't drive a 5K screen from anywhere else. That's the only one that'll drive a screen that's that high resolution.
Wow.
But it looks fabulous.
That's great, and no more beach balls. Standing at beach balls.
It will be faster. I can't promise no more beach balls. I think one of the things you'll notice immediately is a solid. Now they have various choices of hard drive configuration on that one. You can get the Apple Fusion drive, you can get a spinning drive, or you can get a solid state drive. If you really want speed, and you don't need a huge amount of storage, a solid state drive makes a big difference.
And is that a lot more than the $2,000 for the low-end model?
I'd have to go to the, I think the 2000, the base model.
What I'm looking at.
Yeah, I think the base model is a Fusion drive is my guess. But let me go to store.apple.com and,
thank you.
And look for you, because I'm not sure. It's one of those things where you configure it, right? You press options. And you make it your own. And so that's the nice thing about that is you can mess with it a little bit. So now the new 5K iMac starts at $2,000. Let's start with a $2,000 one, and we'll see what's in it. 8 gigs of RAM, that's probably enough, although if you wanted to put in more, you can down the road. Your storage is where you're kind of stuck.
Exactly.
And if you wanted to put – so it comes with a terabyte fully spinning drive. That's the slowest option, by the way.
Right.
If you want to put a terabyte, it'll cost you $1,000 to put an equivalent solid state drive in. But if you don't mind having 256 gigs, it'll only be $200 more.
Right.
That's going to make a lot of difference in speed. But if you're price sensitive, then maybe just stick with a terabyte drive. Right. But understand, it is a non-trivial thing, even on the older iMacs, to put in a new hard drive. I've done it. You need a giant suction cup to remove the screen.
I would do it myself anyway. Yeah. No way.
Well, they can do it. Right. Apple can do it.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, thank you so much. That's great.
My pleasure. Great. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Yeah. Keep listening. And call me back. If I was wrong, say, I bought that 5K. I hate it. But I don't think you will. It is a work of art. They do offer, you can get a terabyte Fusion drive. I have a Fusion drive in my current iMac. This is Apple's kind of crazy idea of mixing a small solid-state drive with a large spinning drive. And it's not, so you can get, for $200 more, the terabyte Fusion drive. Unless you really need that storage, I wouldn't. The Fusion drive isn't as fast as a solid-state drive. Maybe a little faster than a regular drive. The idea is the operating system watches you work and says, oh, you're using that file a lot. Let me put that on the solid-state drive where it's a lot faster. I think the best way to do it, frankly, get a pure solid-state drive big enough to hold your operating system and your applications. And then if you need a lot of extra room for data, get a Thunderbolt, external Thunderbolt drive. You can get a, they're a lot cheaper because they're external, and use that for your data drive. The Mac can do that very easily. And that way you get the benefit of a solid-state drive, fast booting, fast application loading, really makes the machine feel much faster. We often talk about how fast a machine is by talking about its processor. How many gigahertz is the and that is really only a part of the whole story. The speed of the machine is not just a factor of the speed of the processor or the speed of the processor plus the speed of the graphics unit, but it's also, in fact, maybe even more so, how much RAM you have and how fast your hard drive is. Waiting for memory or a hard drive will slow down even the fastest processor. So it's you got to consider the holistic whole of the thing, not just how many. Well, how many gigahertz? Oh, it's 8 gigahertz. Oh, that's got to be fast. Yeah, that's a fast processor. But if your hard drive's as low as molasses, the processors don't matter. So you got to consider it all. And I think an SSD is the single best upgrade you can get to most computers. It will speed up almost any computer. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls coming up right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Let's see who else we have here. Lots of calls. Carrie, Cottonwood, Arizona is next. Hi, Carrie.
It's actually Carrie, but that's okay. I have an 09 Mac. Always had Macs. Real happy with them. In November, I got an iPhone 6. And then about 3 months ago, I got my iPad Air. Been real busy. I haven't.
How long ago? 3 months ago?
Yeah.
Oh, good. All right. Brand new.
Yeah, brand new. I don't have any issue with that. So I haven't been really shaking everything because I've been working like a crazy person. And my daughter upgraded my desktop to OS X Yosemite. Well, I kept
How old is your daughter?
17.
Oh, okay.
18.
For some reason, I imagine like a 6-year-old going in there. I don't want to update it to OS X Yosemite.
Oh, we're past all that.
Okay. So a 17-year-old, yeah, they're know-it-alls, aren't they?
Yes.
Mom needs the newest version.
Yeah, she did that, and everything was great. And then I started getting messages on my devices saying that I had storage issues. And so I put off syncing my devices. I'd go to work. I'd come home. Now, all of a sudden, I cannot sync my devices. I have no iPhoto, and I don't have my 13,000 photographs that were stored on my desktop. I don't know how to reach them. So
first thing I want you to do is figure out what that means. I don't have any storage left. Are they talking about the iCloud? How about your hard drive on the Mac? Is it full?
Well, my storage says that I have 80.41 gigabytes free.
84 gigabytes, not megabytes, gigabytes.
Gigabytes.
Yeah, if it were megabytes, you might be worried, but no, 84 is plenty of gigabytes. So maybe they're talking about the iCloud, because photos, by the way, this was the main reason why your daughter shouldn't have done this, is she's unwittingly upgraded you from iPhoto to this new Photos solution. Apple got rid of iPhoto and has replaced it with Photos. You can still use iPhoto. Have you tried launching your iPhoto?
I have, and it says that it's not available, and it refers me to the Apple Store.
Nice. Really nice. Let me just see if my iPhoto launches. I thought you could still launch it, because that's where your 13,000 photos would still be living.
It says I'm using it 55 gigabytes for photos, but, you know.
Whoa! Nice! That's a lot of photos. Okay. So, yeah. It's referring you to the store because I guess you didn't have... Did you use iPhoto? Is that what you used to use?
Yeah, it's forever.
Right. Well, download iPhoto,
I just launched it on my, you know, I did the same thing. I upgraded to Yosemite, the current version, which is 10.10. Mm-hmm. And actually, it's now up to 10.10.3 because they've had some fixes. And it, of course, puts photos on there and kind of wants you to use photos. But iPhotos doesn't, it shouldn't disappear. You should be able to use either one. And iPhoto will probably still have your 13,000, I'm hoping, will still have your 13,000 photos in there. So I'm running both simultaneously right now. I have iPhoto and Photos.
You're way quicker than me.
I'm wondering, you know, maybe your daughter deleted iPhoto. But you can get it's free from the store, so you can download it again.
Okay.
So, you can also look, and I would do this on your hard drive, actually go to the pictures folder and see if you have you'll have a photos library. That's the library that Photos creates. But you should still have an iPhoto library. If you see that still on your hard drive, that's within that your originals are. And I want you to back them up right now. Because I don't want you to go any farther.
Go buy a vintage disc today and
buy an external hard drive. If you want to back it all up, just back up the entire iPhoto library. But you can also right-click on it and select Show Package Contents. And you'll see what's inside that folder. And that will include, or should include, the originals. Now, I'm looking at mine. I don't have any originals in mine. But it should include the originals. And I think it's in a folder called Original Photos. You want to at least back up that folder. Now, maybe not. Maybe they've changed the way they do this. It looks like they have. So thank you, Apple, for changing all this and not really documenting it all too well. I guess
right. I don't want to call up and spend $25 an hour.
No.
This
is really frustrating to me and a lot of people because they've decided, you know, on their own, oh, no, nobody should be using iPhoto anymore. You should be using our new Photos app. There is some advantage to the new Photos app if you use an iOS device, for instance. It can use this new iCloud drive to back up all your photos, but only put size-appropriate files on your mobile devices. That saves space.
How much does the Photos app cost? I mean,
it's all free.
It's all free.
Yeah, but, well, there is a cost, which is your emotional stability, but there's no dollar cost to this.
And 13,000 photos.
I would freak out if I were you. But this is why backup is so important, because stuff happens. So, yeah, go to the store today, get an external drive, get a terabyte external drive. That's enough to hold all your photos easily. And then I would look through the pictures folder on your computer and copy the old iPhoto library, copy the new Photos library. Imagine it made one. Have you opened Photos yet?
No, it's not even, no, nothing's on the computer. There's no access to any of it. Yeah.
Wait a minute. The whole computer's gone?
I don't know what to download.
Well, wait a minute. Now, this is another problem. When you turn on the computer, it doesn't work?
Oh, the computer works.
Oh, good.
I click on iPhoto, and
it says go to the store.
It down to my bar, and it says in order to open iPhoto app, you need to update the latest version. And then it says search app store, and I click on search app store, and it pulls up books, you know, and I'm like, I don't need a book. I need an app.
Well, all right. So instead of iPhoto, well, first thing I do is get that drive and copy your iPhoto library and your Photos library and any original photo folder that you see on your drive. Copy that to an external drive. That's preserving it.
Okay.
Against anything that might happen next. Once you've done that, once you've made a backup of your files, so you know, you know, if I screw this up, it's going to be all right. Open Photos. That has replaced iPhoto. And what Photos will say is, oh, hello, welcome to the new Photos. I'm going to migrate your photos now. And with 13,000 photos, it should take some time. And it'll move everything over from the iPhoto library without deleting it, but that's why we backed it up, into a new Photos library. And inside, and then you should see all your photos in the new app, which has replaced iPhoto. Photos is it's not worse than iPhoto. It's just different. And it has some new features that are good but hard to figure out.
like they hide stuff. Like it has face recognition and has mapping, all the stuff that it books and all the things that iPhoto used to do. But it's not immediately obvious where they live. So you have to mess around with it or maybe read some of the online tutorial stuff.
Okay.
Some people really hate photos. But, of course, when you change and you change people forcefully from one program to another, it's going to upset people.
That's why we like Mac, because we don't like change.
No, yeah, welcome. Welcome to the new Apple. I think this was misguided, but it is the way that it is. So back up, then open Photos, and I think everything's going to be fine. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's what we need, more bagpipes. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 88 ask Leo. I've just been knocking around inside of my Photos app on Apple's new Yosemite, and I got to say, you blew this one, Apple. It is just confusing as heck, and I think people are really, like, justly baffled. And the problem is, you're not just messing around with, you know, stuff I don't care. These are my photos. These are my. Don't mess with my photos, man. That's my life. And don't kind of randomly change things and then give me incomprehensible error messages, because that's my photos. So yeah, I can understand why people are kind of made nervous about this. Backup is the only solution. Just make sure you have a good backup off the Mac, not in the Mac. In fact, get your stuff, and then if something goes wrong, well, I got a backup. I completely understand her confusion, and it's a shame because, you know, when Apple really, when first came out with the Macintosh, really was an alternative, an easier way to use a computer, and they called it the computer for the rest of us, for the creative folks, and they really got photographers to use it, and they got musicians and artists. They got real people to use it, saying, look, this is a better kind of computer. But it, unfortunately, I think this happens in technology in general. It just, over time, you lose your way. The geeks take over, engineers take over, and engineers write error messages like, switching the system photo library will turn off iCloud photo library. Any photos and videos that have not been fully downloaded will be removed from this Mac. Turn on iCloud photo library for this new system photo library in preferences. Okay. Or cancel. What? Huh? English, please. Bob in Tehachapi, California. You're next. Hi, Bob. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, yo, Leo. I'm all flabbergasted to talk to you.
Well, don't be flabbergasted. Get your flabber really, back on, and let's talk. Let's you and me. We'll have a conversation.
All right. I'm thinking about this new form of home automation, and I'm kind of curious about the security of the, like, some of the underlying.
Oh, yeah.
Like Z-Wave and,
oh, yeah,
Zigbee. Since it's going to be running the locks in the house, you know, I kind of have this dream of waking up in the middle of the night with the locks opening or something like that. What do you think?
This is a brand new area, and I think we have yet to really have heard all the downside. This is what they sometimes are calling it the, we used to call it home automation, Zigbee, Z-Wave, X10. These are all home automation solutions. Now it's called the Internet of Things. Your thermostat is on the internet, your refrigerator, your locks, Schlage, Kwikset, they make these locks. You walk up to them with an iPhone and they've been paired and it says, oh, hey, look, it's Bob. Open the door. And it opens the door. And you're quite right to be a little concerned about this. And I'll give you an example. How many of us have keyless fobs, keyless entry fobs for our cars, right? In fact, I walk up to my car. It, somehow it knows I'm there. It unlocks. I open the door. I get in. And instead of putting a key in the ignition, I press a button. It starts and I drive off. What could go wrong? Well, it turns out that there's a device you can buy on eBay for $17 that will bypass this whole system and let anybody get in your car and drive off. What? What? And the real problem is this system was, unfortunately, this is what happens. The system was designed kind of in a vacuum. Then it gets out in the real world and oops, but what are you going to do now? Because you designed a car around this. Here's the weakness, and this is just one example, and I think you're exactly right. I know it's going to be, we're going to hear about this for the next 10 years. all of these problems. So here's the problem with keyless entry on a car. It turns out the way the car knows that it's you about to get in is proximity. That your little key fob is broadcasting, but it will, but only for a very short distance. So when you get next to the car and you open the door, it goes, ah, yes, I see the fob. Good. The $17 device you buy on eBay takes the little tiny broadcast from your key fob and booms it out over a large area. So the way this might work, if somebody sees you drive up to the valet parking in your Lamborghini and you give the fob to the tenant, you know, they hang those in those little boxes, right? All the guy has to do is stand next to the box with this transmitter, and it's taking your fob and booming it out, and then his accomplice gets in your Lamborghini and drives off. Or more likely goes through it and you know, takes everything of value out of your car. So this is a known flaw. It's in every keyless entry system, and most new cars have them. You've probably seen two TV news reports about it. My friend Nick Bilton, who writes for the New York Times, was flabbergasted. He was standing outside his door. He watched kids go down the street one by one. They opened his Prius, get in, take everything out, go to the next one, go to the next one, go to the next one. All the doors were open. And so, yes, you nailed it, that these connected devices are being now put on the internet. They're broadcasting. And the people who design them are not paying, I think, sufficient attention to security. I can't speak specifically to whether Z-Wave or Zigbee is a secure protocol. I don't know. But I do know that we're hearing, you know, more and more that these, for instance, these connected thermostats, it's possible to hack into, I believe it was the Nest thermostat, and turn somebody's heat up. Now, that's pretty scary. It's not like the end of the world, but if you come home and your house is 105 degrees because the heat's turned all the way up, it's not a good feeling.
So, well, maybe it'll have opened the doors and then cooled it down for you.
Yeah. So you're right to have your gas flabbered, because this is not good. And I suspect that we're going to hear more and more of these because everybody and their brother is making these. And here's the problem. We were talking earlier about router insecurity. That many, many routers use an old library written many years ago for connecting USB disks to the router. You know, some routers, you can put a hard drive on the router and it becomes a network drive. Turns out the original reference code was badly, very poorly written, has a horrible security flaw in it, but it's built in now into millions of routers, and there's no good fix. So it's just out there. Same thing with your key fob. It's just out there. And as soon as the bad guys figure it out and put out a $17 device that lets you open the doors of any car, it's over. So I don't know. You're right. Be worried. And maybe slow to adopt. I don't know. Quickset and Schlage make these Bluetooth locks. I don't know of a flaw. I guess if you use them, it would behoove you to stay on top of the security issues involved. You know, set up a Google alert for a Quickset exploit or something like that. On the one hand, I love the security and convenience of a Nest thermostat and, you know, all of this stuff. But on the other hand, I think we are entering a brave new world of security problems.
All right. Thanks a lot, man.
You're welcome. You asked the right question. Now, remember, a lock is just a serving suggestion. A lock is not really security. It gives us an illusion of security, and it gives us you know, it's a signal, a societal signal. I don't want you to walk in my door. But a lock isn't. I mean, anybody can kick in a door. And if you can't, you can break the window. Your house is completely permeable. If somebody's determined to get into your house, it'd be much, much more difficult than just putting a lock on the door to keep them out. The lock is a signal. It's a legal, statement that you don't want anybody walking in there. And if they do, it's now breaking an entry. So The lock only keeps honest people out, and I guess a key fob only keeps honest people from driving your car away. It all kind of relies on a societal contract, and most people are good. The problem is there's a small percentage of people who are bad, and as they get more technically sophisticated, I feel like we're chickens and we don't have a coop to go into, and the fox is just down the road. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the phone number. One more segment to go as we wrap up this weekend on the Tech Guys Show. How do
When did the car key emerge, right? A Model T, I don't think there was a key. You got in front of it. Somebody sat in the driver's seat. Somebody got in front and turned the crank. And then he said, turn the crank. And you press the button. You had to make sure you let go of the crank before the car started, because otherwise it would tear your arm off. But there was no, I think anybody could, if you saw a Model T on the street, you just could get in and drive off, right? Or no? I wonder, in the 30s, somebody in the chat room says, in the 30s, car keys happened. So what did they do for the first 20 years of cars? You just put it on the street and hope nobody drive off with it? Would you tie it up? Would you lock it up? Of course, here's a thank you, Feld, in our chat room. There is an answer to any question. He's pointing to a website, a metal filter, the origin of car keys, from a 1964 article in Popular Science magazine. Chrysler introduced ignition keys starting in, what year would you guess? 1949. So until 1949, what, you get in and drive off? I guess with a horse, there's no key on a horse. People didn't, it was just societal norms, expectations. You don't get on a man's horse and ride off. He could hang you. You don't get in a fella's car. So 1949, the first car key. So we're kind of just back to the way it used to be. Anybody can get in your car and drive off now. It's just back to the way it used to be. Yep, a hardtop, a sedan without center pillars. Oh, that's a good idea. Introduced by Buick, Olds, and Cadillac. And at the same year, that was 1949, Chrysler introduced ignition keys starting. The next year, they introduced the first all-steel station wagon. So big progress happening in the late 40s. Brian in Santa Clarita, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Brian.
Yep.
Yep. Hey, Brian.
You are taking.
I really probably shouldn't listen in on this conversation. That would be considered rude. I sound like he was maybe reprimanding a child. Heather, why don't you pick up on him? I don't want to. Can I put him on hold? You got him?
Yeah, go ahead and take that.
You're in control now? Dan in Whittier, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Dan.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm good.
First of all, you got to realize I'm a first-time caller, and it's probably not going to be my last time.
I hope I hear from you all the time from now on.
Well, you got to realize, when it comes to technology, I'm a caveman.
Okay.
I have no computer, no landline, no cable, no satellite.
Then we got nothing to talk about, dude. What?
Hold on.
Oh, okay.
My son, who is an IT and telecommunication person at a university, put me on an iPhone 5C.
Oh, man. Okay. How's that going? How's that working for you?
I'm learning.
Good.
I'm learning.
Good.
Now, my question is that we use shared data. So when I'm not near a Wi-Fi hotspot, it uses up the data.
Right.
Now, my question is about personal hotspots. A system like Net Zero, is it really worth getting? And again, or should I look at my provider to see if they can make my phone like a personal hotspot?
So you can certainly go to your provider. They will typically charge you another $20 a month for that. And you'll be using your data. When you use a personal hotspot, that's using the data that you have, that shared data. So it can cost a lot of money. There are solutions like Freedom Pop, Net Zero, where they can give you inexpensive, it's never free, but inexpensive internet. Thing is, as soon as you start using a lot of it, it starts becoming more expensive. It flips.
Okay, we really don't use a whole lot, because occasionally we want to look up a little something again, because I'm not very...
Well, how much data do you and your son share?
I think it's 10 gigs.
Oh, you won't go through that very fast. That's a lot.
But again, my son is an IT...
Oh, who's paying for this shared account?
Right, so he goes through it quite a bit.
Who's paying for this? You?
He is.
Oh, good. So it's, yeah, so You're holding back a little bit. Tethering can use more because, but you have nothing to tether to. Your phone is the only thing you have.
Right, so that's what I use for my computer and everything.
Oh, you do have a computer. I'm sorry. I thought you said you do have a computer. Okay.
I do not have a computer. The phone is what I use for a computer.
So what are you tethering to?
Again, like I said, if I happen to be by a Wi-Fi hotspot or...
Oh, no, that costs you nothing. Okay, yeah, let me explain what's going on here. So if you're, let's say, at a Starbucks or a McDonald's and you're using their Wi-Fi... That doesn't count against your data usage on the phone at all. That's basically free, or whatever you paid McDonald's or Starbucks. Okay?
Right, I understand that. Yeah. But if I get like net zero, and again, it's like about $10.
You don't need net zero. You have nothing to connect it to.
Also, you have to have something in order to connect the net zero to.
Yeah, you don't need it otherwise. What? Oh, I see. You're saying, I think I understand now. You're saying instead of using the shared data that I use with my son, I'd like to use more data. What if I had this other thing that had data that I carried around that my phone would get the data from?
Correct.
Got it. That's called tethering.
Okay.
And actually, it's not called tethering. I take it back. That's just called using somebody else's Wi-Fi. In this case, Wi-Fi you've paid for in addition. Do you run out? Is your son complaining?
We get pretty close sometimes, you know, because we get the notice that we're up to like 80. We use about 80% of our
data. Yeah. And then if you use another gigabyte, it's usually $10 a gigabyte.
Yeah, but again, like I said, he's gracious enough because
it's cheaper. Believe me, I don't get something else because it's what you're doing is probably cheaper. For instance, I don't know about net zero, but Freedom Pop. Which is a good way to go if you don't use a lot of data. But as soon as you use more than the kind of the low price freebie stuff, it's $15 per gigabyte. So it's 50% more than getting data from your cell carrier. So in other words, if you go over, better to go over with your cell carrier than a third party card in your pocket. In other words, keep doing what you're doing. You're good.
All right, but like I said, but if I did decide to go with the net zero, because I can afford like $10 a month, easy. Again, like it says, I can use that pretty much anywhere. Otherwise, I have to try to find a Wi-Fi hotspot.
Yeah. Right. It's basically carrying a Wi-Fi hotspot in your pocket. But look...
And I don't need a computer or anything else to hook up
no,
to.
No. The net zero would actually be what your phone would use for data when it couldn't... when you couldn't use Wi-Fi. But look carefully at the plan because they kind of get you. They say it starts at $9.95, but that's for 500 megabytes, less than that, half a gig. And as soon as you go to a gigabyte, you pay $19.95. That's for 1 gigabyte. 2 gigabytes, $34.95. So they're charging more per gigabyte, significantly more per gigabyte than your phone company is.
I see.
So you'd be better off. Just either getting a bigger plan if you consistently go over, or just who's your carrier?
AT&T.
So inquire, and I think it is $10 a gigabyte, but inquire, on my plan, if I go over the 10 gigs we buy, how much does it cost? It's typically $10 per gigabyte. And if you look at these other plans from companies like Net Zero, it's more than that, and that's how they get you. They get you with, it's only $10 a month, but in fact, it's $0 for 200 megabytes. Nobody in their life ever used 200 megabytes.
I see.
You use 200 megabytes when you get up in the morning and check your mail.
And that's even cheaper than making my phone a personal hotspot?
You could make your phone, this is your phone. Go with your phone. It's 10 bucks per additional gigabyte. You already got 10. You're probably not going to exceed 10 most of the time. And on those months you do, you'll pay $10 per gigabyte. Just be careful. Don't start watching Netflix day in, day out.
Never do.
Yeah. I think you're fine. I understand your idea was, would it be cheaper to use something like a net zero hotspot? It isn't. It's more expensive to use that than to just pay AT&T for additional bandwidth.
Okay, I understand. So I don't need to make the phone as a personal hotspot then.
Well, making the phone a personal hotspot, that is called tethering or hotspotting. That's for some other device, like your computer, but you don't have one. So I think you're good. I think you should stick with what you got. And actually, you know, if you think about it, that 5C, you might say, well, I don't have a computer. That's the most powerful. That is more powerful than the computers any of us were using a few years ago. your computer in your pocket, always on the internet, is actually pretty amazing. So yeah, I think you're golden right now. Talk to your son. Say, hey, son, if we go over 10 gigabytes, how much is it going to cost us? It will probably be $10 a gigabyte. I'm looking at net zero, $50 for 4 gigabytes. But I'm out of time. How can I be out of time? I'm out of time. I thank you. Have a wonderful week. Have a wonderful time of it. I'll see you next week. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.